Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Daily Drum. I'm Harold Fisher. Are you still smoking? We all know how dangerous it is for your health. But for black smokers, menthol-flavored cigarettes remain extremely popular, posing an increased danger to those who indulge. Well, tonight, for our Wellness Wednesday conversation, we look at the impact of cigarette smoking and menthol-flavored cigarettes. My guests are Dr. Carla Williams, Associate Professor of Medicine and Public Health at Howard University and Interim Director of the Howard University Cancer Center, and Del Monte Jefferson, Executive Director at the Center for Black Health and Equity. If you have comments, if you have questions about cigarette smoking, including menthol cigarettes, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Williams, good to have you back on the program again.
Good evening, Harold.
And Mr. Jefferson, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk to you about the No Menthol Sunday initiative that just passed this past Sunday in a minute. But I first want to ask Dr. Williams about cigarette smoking in general. We all know it's bad for you. We know that it can lead to lung cancer, which of course can lead to death. Full disclosure, and I've been talking about this for years and years and years. I quit smoking after 20 years on November 13th of 2001, never to go back again. But with all of the changes in advertising and all of the discussions about the dangers of cigarette smoking, menthol or otherwise, why are people still doing it? Who are the new smokers, and how do they get pulled into this addiction?
Yes, Harold, that's the best question to start with, because we know that ads are still stealthily targeting new smokers. So that means targeting young children, starting in middle school. And we're seeing young children now experimenting less with the traditional cigarette type of products, and more with these new emerging electronic devices, which are, you know, heavy with nicotine and quickly able to get young people addicted. So not only are they being targeted with these products, but we know that there are young people and young adults who are going to be more at risk. And some of those risk factors, you know, maybe that there's a new term that we've learned recently, which is called neurodiverse. Their brains are just different, and they may be more susceptible to becoming dependent on this, on these nicotine products. And so we know that's how we're getting new smokers started.
So are you're suggesting that the advertisements that are still out there, and to be quite honest, I'd struggle to find out where they are. I don't see them. We don't see them on television. We rarely, but occasionally, see cigarette smoking in new movies. Old movies, yeah, you see a lot of it. But I'm still, you know, wondering, there's so much information out there that suggests that this is a really dangerous thing to do. Why do they pick up the habit?
Yes, and that's why I said stealth advertising. I'm noticing it more in new movies, which is shocking me, because we really had gotten to the point that the movie industry understood the need to not have these products placed in their films. But surprisingly, I do see it from time to time. But also remember how the media works now. So youth are on YouTube, they're on Twitter, they're on all these platforms that are really not playing by the rules. And so think about youth culture, which is always trying to step away from the older generation. And so they're going to see it and be exposed to it in so many ways where the adults in their lives may not even be aware and know that they need to have these conversations.
Mm. you know, Mr. Jefferson, and I'm sure you know this, but let me just throw out a couple of facts. This coming from the CDC in a study last year as it relates to menthol smoking and health disparities. 85% of African Americans who smoked use menthol cigarettes. Smokers who successfully quit smoking of non-menthol cigarettes are greater than those who successfully quit smoking menthol cigarettes. It's easier to do the non-menthol than the menthol. And the CDC also says that menthol enhances the effects of nicotine on the brain. I would imagine that those pieces of information are related to this initiative, this No Menthol Sunday. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, that information is definitely related to it, but also the information that we just had from the doctor there that talked about the targeting of Black communities and populations. And let me just go back and add an answer to that. In stores, in communities, in not underdeveloped, but impoverished neighborhoods, you will still find storefronts that say Newport. You will still find that. And the large ads, you will still find that in those neighborhoods. I mean, I saw that just last week. And so they're still out there. We can still find those ads. And so that's just touching on that. But the 85% is that marketing to our communities. It was done intentionally. See, there was a point in time when those ads were plastered. They were all over the place, those large ads. And so that's all you saw. And if you go into the store, still also in those same cities, in those same communities, if you go into the store, you'll still see the Lucy's. You'll still see Lucy's. You can find single Black and Miles. You can find single. You can still find that in our stores. And so that advertising, it was aggressive, and it was targeted at our populations. And let me just say it worked, because we got that number of 85% smoking. And now, to the fact that, you know, smoking menthol makes it harder to quit. Well, look at it. What menthol does, menthol makes it easier to smoke a cigarette in the first place. If menthol wasn't in those cigarettes, they'd be nasty. I mean, I tried smoking a long time ago. I was a teenager. It was the nastiest thing I ever tried. I didn't smoke again. Well, it wasn't a menthol cigarette. And so menthol makes it easier to smoke, easier to go down. Because it's easier to go down, you can inhale deeper and you can inhale more. And what you're inhaling more of is the nicotine. It is the nicotine that's addictive. That's what we're hard to get off of. And so if you're inhaling this thing harder, stronger pulls, then you're going to get more nicotine in your system. And of course, it's going to be harder to quit. So No Menthol was started 9 years ago. 9 years ago. And that's interesting. And it was started by a group of pastors. We had a conference with a group of about 50 pastors from across the country. And we were telling them about this whole menthol thing and what can we do in our communities. And they said, we can all teach from the pulpit at the same time, on the same day, about the harms of mentholated tobacco products. And that's how it started. And we've been doing it ever since. And so it spread. It's across the country now. We're doing it in about 30-something states. We had participation this year from 30-something states. And pastors had different topics. And we give some topic sermons and potential sermon talking points. We put that up on our website and resources like fans, church fans that folks can have. And we put that out there. And it's a great event. And I'm looking forward to next year for our 10th anniversary.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our Wellness Wednesday conversation that we are looking at the impact of cigarette smoking, specifically menthol-flavored cigarettes on the Black community. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Mr. Jefferson, you said you tried smoking as a teenager, didn't appeal to you. Dr. Williams, did you ever smoke?
No, Harold. I was not ever a smoker. I grew up in a household early in my life where one of my parents was a smoker, and thankfully my dad noticed me being interested in the cigarettes at a very, very young age, and talking to him later in life, although it took him several times to quit, he did say, you know, he paid attention to that. And so that piece about, you know, exposure in the home, in the community where it's just normal, I think makes it easier for young people to think about picking up the habit.
You know, I smoked for 20 years, from 1981 to 2001. I did not like menthol cigarettes, but particularly when I was in college, I not only smoked non-mentholated cigarettes, I also smoked a pipe. And you know, unlike the, I guess, the proper way to smoke a pipe, and even today, cigarettes, I did inhale. And I will tell you that I was in college a chain smoker of both cigarettes and a pipe. And at one point, I was smoking 3 packs a day.
Wow.
So, and it was one of the most difficult things that, quitting was one of the most difficult things that I've ever done. I quit twice successfully, the last time in 2001. But, you know, with that said, what are some of the other impediments to quitting, Dr. Williams, for the black community?
Yeah, so the dependence, as you talked about, and that's the word that I use, because the nicotine is an addictive substance, and as you can well articulate, Harold, from your experience, that it takes a lot just to overcome the physical part of it. Then there's the behavioral part of it, where it's part of how you wake up in the morning, it's part of how you drive to work, it's part of how you drink your coffee, it's part
Absolutely.
Of how you have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So overcoming that, and then oftentimes you developed some social pieces to it. So, you know, in the days where people took smoke breaks, then, you know, that was part of the routine. And so that's why in assisting people to overcome this dependence, that we try to make sure that people have the full gamut of care or services. So helping with the physical part of it, with, you know, different medications and tools, helping with the behavioral part of it with support and counseling, having a, you know, someone who is an accountability partner, which is something people don't often like to do, but it can help to have someone else to be there as a support. So when people say, I've tried, as you know, Harold, it takes more than just a willpower. It takes, you know, several pieces to be in place at the same time in a long-term effort, you know, retrying and retrying, each day being a new day, until you get to that point where you can look behind you and you see you've got a week, you've got a month, you've got 6 months behind you without the cigarettes.
Yeah, and there are so many other things, such as being used to having something between your forefinger and your middle finger. And like you said, it became part of driving to work. It became part of indulging in adult beverages. It wasn't just a habit. It was also, you know, a lifestyle, because when I did it, I smoked British cigarettes. I was fancy, but I was hurting. I was fancy, but hurting my health. When we come back from this break, we are going to talk to Marshall calling from D.C. Also, I want to talk about this legislation in D.C. From just a couple of years ago about not selling menthol-flavored cigarettes near school. I have some thoughts about that, and I'm sure you do as well. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Our Wellness Wednesday conversation looks at the impact of cigarette smoking and menthol-flavored cigarettes on the black community. My guests are Dr. Carla Williams, Associate Professor of Medicine and Public Health at Howard University and Interim Director of the Howard University Cancer Center, and Delmonte Jefferson, Executive Director at the Center for Black Health and Equity. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marshall calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I just want to say I was a smoker. I grew up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they didn't make it seem glamorous. If you didn't smoke, you wasn't famous, or it was shown everywhere of your life. But what I want to say is that I'm recovering. I just recovered from non-small cell lung cancer surgery on April the 27th. And I just want to get out to tell the black community that take care of your body, early detective of cancer, you can live without dying.
Yeah.
I have family members that were smokers or ran in my family. My father died from lung cancer when I was a freshman, first semester freshman at Cheney University. My brother died in 2008 from lung cancer. Like they said, they go in and you ask how long, and they told him 2, 3, 4 weeks. Well, he did. He died in December 2007.
Yeah.
I just want to be a walking testimony that, yes, it's in the black community, and they give it to us like anything else. But the smart thing about it is that I want to tell them, don't pick it up. Don't smoke. Get detection. Go to your doctor. Do preventive care.
Yeah.
And that's how I found mine at an early age.
Well, Marshall, thank you so much for sharing with us. And I agree with you 100%. And like a lot of addictions, smoking is something that no matter how long it's been since you've quit, you still have to do it every day because the temptation is certainly there. So it's always a work in progress. Thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Jefferson, first, one of the other things that I have found particularly curious as it relates to smoking, this has less to do with menthol cigarettes and smoking in general. And I'd like to know what you think about it. There has been, anecdotally speaking, a rise in the popularity of cigar smoking, cigar lounges and the like. And even for those who indulge in cigars, which you are not technically supposed to inhale in your lungs, there are still health risks regarding that. What impact do you believe the popularity of cigar smoking has had on smoking in general and cigarettes, if any?
Smoking is dangerous as well as smoking cigarettes. There are no safe tobacco products out on the market. I'm going to say that again. There are no safe tobacco products out on the market. Now, the cigar smoking, as we know in black populations, a lot of black populations, was used to mask mass marijuana that they would use in the cigar leaves. They would just take the leaves and make blunts. I mean, that was done almost 20 years ago, or longer than that. They've been rolling blunts, taking the tobacco out, putting in the marijuana, thinking that it's safer because now it's just marijuana in the tobacco leaf. It's still dangerous because you still got nicotine and you still got those cancer-causing ingredients in the tobacco that it's wrapped around. And so, yes, it looks cool. Yes, it's fashionable, but it's still dangerous and it still can kill you. And if you do, like you said, if you inhale, it's even more dangerous. And so it's dangerous regardless how you look at it because it's a tobacco product. And those products, now those tobacco products are meant, one of three people that use tobacco will die from tobacco. And so those products are not safe products. That's the bottom line.
And I will say, you know, Dr. Williams, I think some of the other impacts, just like there was a time when it seemed that everybody smoked. Even with, you know, cigars, I know that there have been many times when my fraternity brothers have said, hey, man, come on, you know, we're going to go smoke cigarettes, and at the risk of being isolated from the group, I don't. And it's not an excuse. I just say no because I don't smoke anymore. I don't smoke anything. Not to mention, you know, not really interested in having my clothes smell like cigar smoke and the like. And I am willing to take the risk of not being able to hang out with the brothers while they're smoking cigars. I'll wait until they do, you know, something else. But I think that those are some of the other things that some people who, you know, Dr. Williams may feel, you know, that they may not want to risk. They may, you know, go along to get along.
Yeah, there's definitely still a social aspect to it. If you think about, you know, going out, even though in most jurisdictions you can't smoke inside a bar or a club, but people, you know, they gather outside, and that's part of that culture is, you know, taking, you know, that smoke break or standing outside before you go in and having that last smoke. You know, the hookah culture, we haven't mentioned that yet, and that's, you know, people gathering around for social reasons, but, you know, inhaling tobacco products, tobacco smoke for an extended period of time. And so there's so many social aspects that are still in there in the background. And again, going back to the youth, just like I think when most of us were in high school, you know, definitely, you know, sneaking, you know, that sneak factor of, you know, seeing if you can get away with it, either on the school campus or as soon as you leave school, you know, gathering with friends, you know, trying and testing this out. So it's still there, and that social piece, that's why, you know, having policies and culture around us that is more about the tobacco-free lifestyle, I think will help people feel more comfortable stepping away and doing what you said and just saying, you know, no, I don't smoke. I'll get with you guys later.
Yeah. You just talked about policy, for example. And last year, the Flavored Tobacco Product Prohibition Amendment Act of 2021, boy, I tell you, those new laws, they just don't have a ring to them, do they? But they really say what they mean. In the District of Columbia, banning the sale of flavored tobacco, menthol cigarettes, and electronic smoking devices within a quarter mile of middle and high schools in the district. On the face of that, you know, Dr. Williams, it sounds like a great idea, but who is that for?
Well, the flavored part of that bill is for the tobacco retailers. And so this is really focusing on, it's not infringing on anybody's individual freedoms. If you want to use these products, you as an individual, you certainly can. You just can't purchase them in the district from an official tobacco retailer, which just means it's putting an extra level of effort, an extra barrier for folks to then take a beat, as I say, before you decide to just pick up that pack while you're picking up your milk and eggs. You have to make a special trip to go find your, you know, preferred brand. And so that's the intent of the law. It just gives people, just like with just picking up the cigarette, if you take just an extra minute to think and maybe make a different decision, this just makes that a longer thought process that you have to plan now where you're going to pick up these products outside of the district. But it targets the tobacco retailers, not individual tobacco users.
And to your point, perhaps those who are trying to quit, yes, that may, giving them that beat, as you mentioned, giving them a pause, that may help them. But I will, you know, tell you, as a person who had a very serious habit, it didn't matter. It didn't matter.
No.
Yeah.
Let me add to that. You're absolutely right, because you're absolutely right. The policy that's put in place is there to help. We're not saying that it's just going to completely stop folks from who wants to smoke from getting the product. If you want the product, you're going to get the product. That's given. However, if it's an extra barrier that you have to go through, it's going to cause pause. Now, what happens is this. Policies have been the most effective way of driving cessation. That tax rate, raising taxes on cigarettes is the most effective strategy to curtail and prevent tobacco use, raising taxes. And so if you have a policy that keeps that price of cigarettes high, people get to a point where they say enough. It might take a long time, and they'll complain. Absolutely, they're going to complain. But eventually, that policy will have a positive effect.
I agree. I agree with the cigarette taxes piece because and when I was going through this journey of trying to quit, and you got to remember this was back in the old days, you know, where in 2000 I figured out that I was spending, about $7,500 a year in cigarette smoking. I was no longer a chain smoker, but I was spending $5 a pack when cigarettes were normally, domestic cigarettes were under $2 a pack, because I told you I was fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But so when I quit in 2001, I put away my cigarette money. I saved my cigarette money. And in October of 2002, I bought my first house with the money that I was able to save.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it really, really was. And so not only was I protecting my health, but I was also, you know, on the road to some financial freedoms as well. But again, you know, and I think that, you know, Mr. Jefferson, for a lot of people in the Black community, you do need willpower. You do need incentives other than just the obvious health incentive, because I think that for a lot of people, it goes in one ear and out the other.
And so, and the old other things that you need, I think Dr. Williams was touching on them, you need those policies that also support it. You need to have policies that say you can't smoke here. You need to have policies that say, hey, we're not selling mentholated tobacco products here. You need to have those policies in place. But then the other thing you have to have, and she talked about this, are those cessation efforts and those cessation offers that are out there. And those cessation offers and those cessation efforts have to be culturally appropriate. They have to relate to the problem that a person smoking menthol, what I might be going through, if it's in the Black community, I might have stressors because of racism, because of work, because of housing, because of whatever. I might have stressors that's triggering me to smoke. Well, you've got to be able to address those stressors when you're dealing with it. And our normal quit lines may not be able to do that. And so that's how come you've got to have culturally appropriate cessation counseling to help our smokers that want to quit mentholated tobacco products.
Dr. Williams, I know that you are a psychologist, but from your work at the Cancer Center, I'm sure you have some information and some thoughts about vaping and the impact on the health impacts on the body, because a lot of people who defend vaping will say, well, it's just water vapor, it's not smoke. Talk to me a little bit about that, if you could.
Sure. So with vaping, two things, that those initial products that were developed now nearly 20 years ago were designed, they were actually kind of artisan design. They were specialty products that were for a certain segment of the population that just wanted to develop and use those products. They were not intended at that time for mass production, which is where we are right now. And those mass-produced products have very high levels, extremely high levels of nicotine compared to what the thought was when, you know, people first tried to develop these new products. So now what we're getting on the commercial market are products that are even more addictive in terms of the nicotine compared to a traditional regular cigarette. But we also don't know, and that's the answer, we don't know in terms of the long-term effects of using these mass-produced products and, you know, the chemical combinations that are inside the liquids that are used. And just as we had the caller talking about recovering from lung cancer, we don't need to wait another 20 to 30 to 40 years to see the outcomes. We can just, let's just stipulate that there's a good chance that the outcomes are not going to be good, so let's just try to curtail these now. But these are not the products that you're able to buy in the stores and to order online are highly, highly addictive, and they can't even be sold in other countries because of the nicotine levels.
Hmm. Mr. Jefferson, can you talk to us about, as we, you know, really try to move forward and address this? Obviously, No Menthol Sunday is a good start, but you mentioned you had, you know, lots of messages in the black church. Allow me to say, okay, in some senses that may be preaching to the choir, but how do we reach those people who may be at least initially resistant to a No Menthol Sunday, not smoking, you know, at all? Because and admittedly, even though this remains a problem in the black community, people don't smoke the way they used to. You know, as I said, there was a time when there were a lot of people in my personal orbit. My mother smoked, my stepfather, he smoked at one point, but he developed lung cancer, died of a heart attack. My father quit smoking on the day I was born. The guys that I hung out with, all of us smoked at one point. Now only one of us smokes. So the message is kind of getting through, but other things need to be done to get, you know, to get those messages out to really touch those hardcore smokers.
Well, yeah, you got to touch the hardcore smokers, and touching the hardcore smokers really means addressing the stressors and the reasons why they're smoking in the first place. Black communities have suffered, and they continue to suffer, and some of those stressors that we're suffering causes us to smoke. And so the message, you know, in a church for No Menthol Sunday, that might be, there's two messages. One might be, hey, guys, let's quit together. Let's do it together, because I think Dr. Williams said, you know, having that peer. And so let's quit together. That's one message. But another message is, hey, let's advocate and help to clean up our communities. Let's do that. And let's get smoking out of our communities. Let's get more healthy food in our communities. Let's get more walking trails in our communities. And so now we're starting to deal with the stressors. Let's go out and make sure that our brothers and sisters that need employment, that we can help them find jobs. Let's do something about housing. Let's do something about crime. We saw what happened Memorial Day weekend. So No Menthol Sunday should be not just about abstaining from smoking, but addressing these stressors within our community that lead to smoking and picking up that habit in the first place.
Dr. Williams, what do you suggest for people who are attempting to quit? I'll share with you my experience and some of the ultimate success, but even some of the failures as well. But from your level of expertise, what do you tell people who are trying to get this done?
Yeah, and I think having people who share their experiences and lessons learned is an important part of helping people to quit. From a standard approach, what we do know is some type of medication, sometimes they contain nicotine as a weaning process and you gradually reduce, and sometimes there are brands that are non-nicotine. And people have to find what works for them. And I know that's the frustrating part, because if you go to your healthcare provider says, I recommend you use this, it'll help you quit, and it doesn't, people become frustrated. And I think understanding that the process is not going to be a smooth sail all the way through, there are going to be stops and starts, but it is a little bit of trial and error until you find what works for you, but have confidence that there is something that will work and help you. And as I said, in addition to the medical support, connecting with some sort of other external support to go through all those other things, Harold, that you talked about in terms of behaviors and you know, repeated processes and habits, if we will. And that could be online. It could be groups. There are even apps that help people, you know, think through plans and keep you on target. So there's so many resources that we have now, telephone, counseling, and support. Again, it's a combination that's going to work for each individual, and there's absolutely not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Dr. Williams, are they still using the patch to help people quit?
Yes, absolutely. And as you said, you were a three-pack-a-day smoker.
Mm-hmm.
So one patch for you would not have been enough.
That's true.
Yeah, that's what people don't understand. So we try to, you know, remind our healthcare providers that if someone is smoking that much, they're getting a certain amount of nicotine per day. And if we want to gradually wean them off, we have to start with that very high dose and then gradually take them down. And so that's, again, one of those things that can frustrate people because they may just not be getting the right dose of what they need.
Mm-hmm. Nicorette, the gum, still a viable option?
The gum, the patch, the gum, there are lozenges, and you have to learn how to use them. Any pharmacy where they are sold, the pharmacist can help people understand how to use them because, for example, you don't chew the gum. It's not like regular, you know, chewing gum. It's used in a certain way because it is a medicine. And so a pharmacist, and that's what people don't know, pharmacists can help and provide counseling and help people select many of these products that are available over the counter. And so, yes, we have patches, we have gum, there's lozenges, there's inhalers of, you know, oral and nasal inhalers. And then, as I said, there are a couple of pill forms that are non-nicotine based. And people find, in fact, acupuncture has been shown to have some effects. Stress management, as Del Monte was mentioning, I think is essential to an effective quit smoking plan and then some sort of social support.
I would say for me, and I think this may work for some people, you just have to find out where your weakness was to quit. And the first thing, I was dating a really fine woman, and she said, it's either the cigarettes or me. That was the first incentive. Okay. You know, I say that tongue in cheek, but that's very, very true. She said, either the cigarettes or me. Okay. So I moved on. I will tell you, I did try the gum. You're right. Dr. Williams, you can't chew it. You're supposed to squeeze it and park it in your cheek. Well, because if you chew it, then you get an extra large dose of nicotine, which, you know, you can't drive or walk straight with, you know, with that kind of nicotine, you know, in your, you know, in your system. And, you know, and that was it. But, you know, one of the other things, and this went all the way back to when I tried it back in the 90s, the reason I first started was because I was on television in Alabama. There was a story about quitting smoking on the air. I was sitting on the news set with my co-anchor, and she reaches in my pocket when the story ended and pulls out my cigarettes and holds them up in my face and says, okay, are you going to quit? And what was I going to say? I had to say yes. Because
this was on the air.
This was on the air. This was on the air. Had no idea she was going to do it. But I quit for 6 months, but then went to another television station. And this is how that addiction works. the minute that I moved to the next city, literally the same day, I went to a smoke shop because the addiction for me to nicotine was so intense. And certainly, you know, a lot of people, and Dr. Williams, I'm sure you could speak to this as it relates to, you know, some of the people that you serve at the, you know, the cancer center. Some of them are concerned about gaining weight when they quit. There is a risk of that, and so that also has to be dealt with, because I gained weight when I quit. But that was not as severe a risk to my health as the smoking.
Definitely.
You know. And I will also tell you, here's the upside. Once I quit, I could taste my food better. I like spicy food. Mm-hmm. Food got really spicy when I quit. Mm-hmm. You know, I will tell you, if you do decide to quit, yeah, your dreams are going to be realistic because you got more oxygen to your brain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are all of the things that you kind of go through. But I will say it is worth it. And I will just say, and you know, Dr. Williams, you can close your ears, and I'll just say this to, you know, Mr. Jefferson, everything works better, Mr. Jefferson, once you quit smoking. as they say on the streets, no cap, you know.
No
so
cap.
that is the real deal, and you know, everything is better when you don't smoke. But it is certainly a journey. And it's something that, you know, I'm happy that I will never go back to. And I advise anyone to stop today. I've got a few minutes. I'll start with you, you know, Mr. Jefferson, as we move forward. Looking at your mission to get people to quit smoking, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, again, get yourself a plan. Make yourself a plan. You know the health risks. You're adults listening to the station. You know the health risks. Make yourself a plan to quit. And it's going to be a multi-pronged plan. You know, you're going to need cessation counseling. You might need to call the quit line. I'm sure there's a quit line in D.C. There's a national quit line. You're going to need cessation counseling. You're going to need resources, DNRT resources, and your state might be able to provide those for you free of charge. If not, talk with your employer and your health care plan. Most health care plans are offering free NRT. And so check it out, see what's there. And then the other part of it, in terms of that journey, in terms of your own individual journey, if you're engaged and involved in other advocacy activities to ban smoking in public places, to ban the sale of menthol, that's going to also be a catalyst for helping you to make sure that you're quit, because you're trying to help not only save your lives, but save the lives of others in your community.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. And Dr. Williams, some final thoughts from you.
Absolutely. And I will piggyback on that to say we welcome folks in the D.C. area to join our tobacco coalition and work towards what are going to help people quit at the community level. And it's finding that personal motivation, just like you did, Harold. What is that personal motivation? And really working towards a healthy lifestyle and understanding that we're all working towards this so that people who are quitting smoking as part of their healthy lifestyle don't feel alone. We're also working to eat healthy, to be active, to manage our stress, to have social connections. And so we're all always working towards improving our health and wellness.
I think that is a great place to end this conversation, at least for today. But again, I encourage any and everyone who is smoking and not thinking about quitting to consider it. And if you are thinking about quitting, think a little more. Have one less cigarette today. Take a walk. Grab a cinnamon stick and inhale air through the cinnamon stick. That actually worked for me. It felt like a cigarette and it was just air. Just, you know, anything to keep you from continuing to smoke cigarettes, menthol or otherwise. Dr. Carla Williams, Del Monte Jefferson, thank you both so much for talking to us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, May 31st. I'm Harold Fisher. Smoke free. Good night.